Welcome to Reconquest on the Crusade channel of the Veritas Radio Network. This is your host, Brother Andre Marie, coming to you from St. Benedict Center in Richmond, New Hampshire. Our websites are Catholicism.org and Reconquest.net. By the way, you can go to Reconquest.net on any given Saturday and see what's going to be the next show on the following Wednesday. So look at Reconquest.net on Saturday or the next couple of days to see what we're going to be talking about on Wednesday nights. My email address is bam@catholicism.org if you'd like to email me. I'm also found on Twitter @brother_Andre and on Facebook. Tonight's show is on the Christian politics of Spain's Carlist counter-revolutionaries. My guest in the second segment will be Dr. Alexandra Wilhelmsen, the professor of Spanish and adjunct professor of history at the University of Dallas. She is the expert there on Spanish history. And she is in particular an acknowledged expert on Spanish Carlism, which is the counter-revolutionary religious and political movement that we're going to be discussing tonight. So let's get started. Spiritual writers tell us that there are two ways of considering ascetical and mystical theology, also known as spiritual theology. One is from its theological principles, and the other is by studying the lives of those who lived in a holy way. That is, of course, our Lord and our Lady first, and then the saints. Both of these ways are necessary, and both are important. But if we divorce principles from practice, we risk becoming too abstract or even ideological. Our faith is incarnational. The faith must be lived, not only adhered to. So we should learn both the recipe as contained in the principles, and we should watch those who cooked that recipe correctly for our edification and encouragement. Something similar might be said of our political life as Christians. By the way, when I talk about politics in this context, I mean the way society ought to be governed. I don't mean the art of the possible. In our political life, as in everything else, we must be disciples of Christ in word and deed, and not in word only. Looking at how Christian politics have been lived by those who did it well will help us to conceptualize as well as work to build a Christian social order. With that in mind, in this first show dedicated to Christian politics, I have a recognized expert on the subject of a true counter-revolutionary Catholic political movement, an historical reality with its principles and its heroes, to discuss a modern embodiment of Catholic political ideals. We begin with some principles and move on to a summary history. First, we're going to be discussing a monarchist movement. So a little apologia is in order for my fellow Americans who have been taught to offer incense at the altar of democracy. The type of traditional monarchy that we'll be discussing here is not what most Americans associate with monarchy. We have been taught, on the whole, to hate all monarchies and to consider them all, contrary to the facts of history, to be systems of absolute rule of one man. Miguel Ayuso, a leading contemporary Carlist thinker in Spain and also a friend of our guest tonight, holds that absolutism was itself liberal. And the Belgian Catholic historian Godfrey Kurth, who died in 1916, wrote in his book, The Church at the Turning Points of History, that French absolutism led to the horrible liberal revolution of 1789 that we know as the French Revolution, by a sort of inexorable logic. That is, if the king rules by whim with no further checks on his power, then revolution will happen eventually. No, the traditional view of monarchy, as we will discuss here, differs from what the modern man has been taught to hate. The traditional Catholic monarchy is respectful of higher principles than the whim of the ruler. It is respectful of God's rights and the true religion first, but it also respects the family, local rule, the rights of various intermediate institutions that stand between the individual and the state, and the diverse local customs that are rooted in the land and in its people. It is my belief that the so-called balance of powers of our constitutional republic has a superior historical antecedent in the more organic and natural balance of powers that is contained in this traditional Christian social order under Christian monarchs. To illustrate succinctly the Carlist vision of political society, I cite the words of Jaime III, the fourth Carlist claimant to the throne of Spain. And I quote, "Above all other aspirations, I desire the reign of Jesus Christ over rulers and nations, in the individual and in society, because I am convinced that there is no salvation outside him for either society or the individual." Okay, now on to some history that will help us to set up my discussion, my conversation, in the next segment with Dr. Wilhelmsen. In 1814, an inept ruler by the name of King Ferdinand VII began his rule as King of Spain. His father was the weak King Charles IV, who paid his son, the prince, little attention. His mother was Maria Lucia of Parma, who was unfaithful to her marriage vows, and whose lover, a man named Godoy, was the de facto ruler of Spain. The boy was morose and sickly, ignored by his parents, and tutored by a man who taught him to hate his mother's adulterous lover. Brought up in these unwholesome surroundings, Ferdinand VII, when his time came, was unprepared to rule. Whether or not it is an entirely just estimate, his mother-in-law's label for him, an absolute blockhead, would at least indicate that he was no great statesman. Ferdinand's father, Charles IV, had been unseated by Napoleon in the Peninsular War, as Napoleon's 1808 invasion of Spain is called. Having first promised the throne of Spain to his own brother, Joseph, Napoleon eventually allowed Ferdinand to rule in Madrid in 1814 as king, but only to rule as something of a puppet of Napoleon's. Breaking his promises to Napoleon and dissolving the liberal constitution of 1812, Ferdinand VII instituted an absolute monarchy with a vengeance. Given the fact that he was not steeped in the best of Spain's traditions of governing, and because of his limited intelligence and abilities, Ferdinand's absolute monarchy became a rule by whim. He vacillated between appeasing and opposing the liberal element, whom he sometimes turned on with cruelty. The strong and Catholic Spanish conservative element grew weary of Ferdinand's whimsical ways and began to look to his pious younger brother, Don Carlos, to assume the throne. Because none of Ferdinand's four marriages had produced a son, and his only heir was a daughter, Isabella, by his fourth wife, Maria Cristina of Naples, Spain's conservatives claimed Carlos to be the legitimate heir. It is very important to keep in mind that by Spanish law since 1713, no female could inherit the Spanish throne. But Ferdinand's clever wife convinced him to annul the Salic law, that is, this law forbidding the throne passing to a female, in order to make Isabella the monarch at her father's death. The absolute monarch, Ferdinand, began to turn to the liberals for support, knowing that they feared and detested Don Carlos's traditional view of the Spanish monarchy, perhaps more than they feared Ferdinand's own absolutism, which they would have considered not liberal. The conservatives who followed the pious Carlos became known after his name as the Carlistas, or Carlists in English, and they have played a part in Spanish politics, culture, and society since 1833. In rapid summary of their history, we can say that for over 100 years, that is from 1833 to 1939, Spain's Carlists fought in four civil wars in defense of the Catholic Church. During each period, the Church herself was under attack either by a liberal or a socialist government. In our next segment, we're going to talk to Dr. Alexandra Wilhelmsen to learn more about this fascinating movement. Please stick around to join us after the break.
You're listening to Reconquest with Brother Andre Marie, seeking that which was lost and fighting for it. exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.